Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
It is for the purpose of ensuring that ADF does not continue to kill and mine civilians in DRC. That is the purpose. As long as we achieve that, we will bear those dissenting voices.
Uganda's foreign minister says the East African country will continue to play a key role in the effort to help ensure Africa's peace and stability.
We are going to demand it until we get it. That's what we are going to stand for. And the world should know that what we are standing for is for the better of the public, is for the better of the Tanzanians. And they should join hands with us, so that this country will continue with peace.
Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, says charges against its national chairman, Freeman Mbowe, are politically motivated.
His figure has always been between 35 and 40%. So really, and that's almost within the margin of error. So in this entire period, his popularity has not moved up at all, nor has it fallen. Whereas the former prime minister has come up quite far from where he was a year ago.
And a new poll shows Kenya's deputy president William Ruto is ahead of main rival and former prime minister Raila Odinga. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The European Union-African Union summit ended in Brussels, Belgium, Friday. Dozens of leaders and top government officials from the two continents attended the meeting. It comes as African countries express concern about what they say are unfair trade agreements between EU member nations and African countries. The EU countries are seeking reforms to address what they say are unfair trade agreements. Uganda's Foreign Minister General Jeje Odongo attended the EU-AU summit. In part two of a Skype interview, I began by asking him about the role Uganda can play to help maintain peace and security on the continent following recent coups and a surge in terrorism and insecurity.
First of all, I want you to understand the genesis and the cause of what is going on in the continent. It is true, as you pointed out, that in only 2021, since the end of 2020, there have been four successful coups on the African continent. Only the beginning of 2022, we had one. Now, if you reflect this back to the 1950s to the 1970s, when we had about 40 successful coups and about 108 unsuccessful coups, you get the ratio of about four coups per year. So we certainly, what is happening is cause for us to get concerned. And we are looking at why is this happening. Our estimation, our inkling, our belief is that there is a mix of factors, but most of them we think are a product of the rise of Islamic fundamentalism on the continent. And this has affected especially those parts of Africa where institutions are weak. We in Uganda have had opportunity to confront this problem. You'll recollect we've had experiences in peace management, peacekeeping on the continent. We were in Liberia, we were in Central Africa, we have been in Somalia, and we are now still in Somalia, and we are now in DRC. We think our experience, the capacity we have built as Uganda, can be a source of strength for the African continent.
Well, General Jeje, what is the latest update talking about the DRC and the presence of the UPDF forces in that country chasing the ADF rebels? What is the latest development regarding the joint military offensive between the FARDC and the UPDF going after these rebels in the DRC?
You'll recollect that in December last year, at the end of December, we embarked on this effort. Why did we do so? Simply because We thought time had come for us to make sure that ADF does not have a safe haven in Eastern DRC. And so we approached our colleagues in DRC and agreed that time has come for us to have a joint effort, one, to destroy the bases of ADF in Eastern DRC, and in hopefully in so doing, and disable their capacity to cause trouble for the region. I am happy to say, since this operation was launched, a number of bases of the ADF have been destroyed. I am happy that as we speak, many of the ADF can no longer concentrate in the manner they used to do. They have split into smaller groups, those who have survived. And we are now discussing with the authorities in the DRC to see how we can now be able to do those mobile operations. But by and large, we've been successful in disorganizing the ADF. We've been able to kill some. We've been able to capture some. We've been able to rescue children that have been abducted. So I think the operation is going on very well.
Opposition groups in Uganda are saying the UPDF should come home. Some in DRC are also saying that they are displeased with the UPDF being in the country. How is your administration addressing these concerns they have?
First of all, you will agree with me that even in a household, people will not always be happy. When you cook meat, others want greens. This is the truth of the matter. But the fact of the matter is, what is the overall purpose? It is for the purpose of securing Uganda in spite of those voices. It is for the purpose of ensuring that ADF does not continue to kill and mine civilians in DRC. That is the purpose. As long as we achieve that, we will bear those dissenting voices.
General JJ Odongo is Uganda's foreign minister. He spoke with me from Brussels, Belgium. In Tanzania, the main opposition party, Chadema, says charges against its national chairman, Freeman Mbowe, are politically motivated. This after a court ruled that Mbowe will stand trial for terrorism. But Chadema says the ruling is yet another demonstration of the use of state institutions, including the judiciary and the police, to clamp down on opponents of the administration, an accusation supporters of the ruling party deny. They contend that those who threaten the country's national security must be made to face the full force of the law to serve as deterrent. For more reaction about the court ruling, I read John Rema, Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols.
We were not surprised by that decision, but we were shocked. We were not surprised because the way the High Court was dealing with this matter since day one, to us, we were sure that the High Court do that, exactly what they have done yesterday. But at the end of the day, everybody in the country knows that the witnesses from the government, they did fail completely to tell how to link Mr. Mbowe with the terrorism charges. And that's why the count number six was dropped by the High Court. And the count number six was among the serious counts because the first accused, Halfan Bwire, was accused that he had in possession the uniforms of the Tanzania Army, a knife of Tanzania Army, and et cetera, et cetera. And they assumed that those things were planned to be used to conduct terrorism activities. But the High Court dropped that serious charge yesterday.
Now, Mr. Mrema, the judge, in looking at the case, said he has viewed all the evidence and believes that the charges against Mr. Mbowe and other members of the party are legitimate and that they have a case to answer.
These charges are politically motivated. And one thing for sure, judge said on Tuesday that he has 1,500 printed pages. We are surprised that a judge can use only 2 days to review 1,500 printed copies, something which is not normal at all. So the judge had his decision without even reviewing what the government said he has said in the court. That's what we are sure, because you can't use 2 days to review 1,500 printed copies. So to us, that's why I'm telling you that we were not surprised, but we were shocked by the decision, because even the judge yesterday, he didn't say what exactly convinced him that Mbowe and the others, they have a case to answer. He didn't say that at all.
Why is Chadema stating that the ruling is a clear result of having a bad constitution that does not guarantee freedom of the judiciary? Isn't the judiciary independent in Tanzania?
Tanzania judiciary under the current constitution is not independent at all, because the judiciary, they can't stand firm against the government, as even the parliament, they can't stand firm against the government. And it was very clear this February that the Speaker of the House was forced to step down by the government because just of his comment that the government should not borrow more because this country is going to be bankrupt. By that statement, the president came out and said that this is nonsense. And 2 days later, the Speaker of the House was forced to step down. And until today, he hasn't appeared in public since February 6th until today. Nobody knows where about him.
You talked about Chadema and its members going to keep on fighting. What does this mean?
We are going to the court again, stand with Mr. Mbowe, and also our demands for new constitution, demands for independent electoral commission, we are going to demand it until we get it. That's what we are going to stand for. And the world should know that what we are standing for is for the better of the public, is for the better of the Tanzanians. And they should join hands with us so that this country will continue with peace.
John Mrema is Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Kenya Deputy President William Ruto has expressed regret following criticism that a recent statement he made about the Democratic Republic of Congo was in poor taste. This after suggesting at a recent rally that the DRC doesn't even have one cow. The comment received swift backlash on social media platforms. DRC Senator Francine Muyumba and some other journalists described the Kenyan Deputy President's statement as disrespectful and demanded an apology. Ruto's rival and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, seen as the main challenger in the upcoming presidential contest, also demanded an apology. But supporters of the incumbent deputy president say he was encouraging Kenyan dairy farmers to seek opportunities in the DRC and in the region. For the latest political development, I reach activist and political commentator Okia Omtata in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
So I think that it's a statement that maybe, if it was not necessarily part of the usual platitudes of the campaign trail, I would personally be interested to see the statistics and see what niche market the deputy president had seen in the DR Congo. And if it is that, it would be good for inter-African trade. That's what we are always talking about, inter-African trade. So I wouldn't make a mountain out of what he said. And I don't think it was an insult to the people of the Congo, because we always keep on talking about inter-African trade. All I would want the DP to do is to substantiate his claim so that it doesn't just become some of those rhetorical things or platitudes that you get on the campaign trail.
Senator Francine Muyumba, who is a lawmaker in Congo, wrote that, Mr. Vice President, this is really unacceptable. With all due respect, there's need to withdraw this statement. If DRC did not have a single cow, how could Kenya sign economic deals with DRC and is currently making money in Congo? This is an insult, she said. It appears that a rival, former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, has officially written to the Deputy President to withdraw his statement. Basically, some people are suggesting this is a diplomatic faux pas on the part of the Deputy President. What do you make of this? Is this politics as usual by the former Prime Minister?
I think there's politics on all sides, including by the official you have referred to from the DR Congo, because sometimes I think that even in Kenya there could be opportunities for products from DR Congo, and that doesn't mean that the people of Kenya are in one way incapacitated or not. Because we only talk of inter-African trade, we talk of pan-Africanism and stuff like that. The only thing for me would be for Mr. Ruto to explain himself and say, the market I saw is this and these are the figures. Because even in Kenya today, we get dairy products from Europe, from wherever, dairy products are always coming into this country. And we've got a lot of cows. So I don't think that it's time to make a mountain hill out of that. To me, the root of this should be challenged to substantiate his claim, not withdraw them if they are factual. And Mr. Raila Odinga should give us the agenda of his campaign.
On the other development, Senate Speaker Kenneth Lusaka has ditched the ruling Jubilee Party and returned to Ford Kenya, which some suggest he hopes to use to reclaim the gubernatorial seat that he lost in 2017 general election. Are we going to see these political gymnastics or before this year's elections?
I think, as former U.S. Speaker Newt Gingrich said, that all politics is local. The decisions that Mr. Lusaka has made are informed by the dynamics on the ground in Bungoma, where he is vying to recapture his gubernatorial seat. So it's also another thing that may not be an indicator of a much bigger issue other than the fact that all politics are local and the country is divided into various persuasions and formations. And sometimes if you come from an area where the tide is moving in a certain direction, you ride it. That's what the speaker would have mainly have done, but it's not symptomatic of anything seismic or whatever on the political scene.
Looking at the ground politically, after campaigns have been stepped up, how do you see the race currently between Deputy President William Ruto and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga?
It's going to be a tight race. So far, they are neck to neck. I don't think there's anybody who will claim a landslide in the current circumstances. We are likely to go for a runoff if a third party emerges who can take 10% of the vote or less and make and force a runoff, because the two people are neck to neck. And largely, Kenyans are being asked to choose between two evils, not a good, and both parties don't have a coherent agenda. And so it's like a race of equals.
Okiya Omtata is an activist and a political commentator. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, a newly released poll shows Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto is ahead of main rival and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga in the run-up to the upcoming general election. The survey by the research company Trend and Insight for Africa, or TIFA, shows Ruto with 38% while Odinga garners 29%. Analysts say the poll findings show none of the leading candidates will be able to receive more than 50% of the vote, the amount needed to take the presidency. Winners must also garner 25% in at least 24 of Kenya's 47 counties. If these requirements are not met, there will likely be a runoff. To break down the research findings, I reached Dr. Tom Wolf, a poll consultant with the market research company Trend and Insight for Africa.
This was the fifth national survey that we've conducted beginning in mid-2020, so over the last 18 months. And we've been exploring the evolving political landscape with regard to the forthcoming August election, as well as investigating a number of other public issues that are affecting Kenyans, which may, to one degree or another, influence the way they respond to the choices that they will eventually find on the ballot papers at both the national and the local level.
What were some of the other issues that you think respondents will focus on or to determine who they would vote for ahead of the election based on your findings?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are a number of factors at work. If we are going to concentrate, at least for the moment, on the presidential race, national Kenyan politics are generally, and the competition for the presidency, generally sort of bounded or constrained by a number of, I can say, structural and psychological factors. There is a division in the Kenyan electorate that really cuts through every individual. That is the attraction or the appeal of candidates because they simply identify with that person in terms of their identity, whether it's ethnic or economic background, and so on. Secondly, the other motivation in the electorate is much more material. That is, they have expectations, whether based on past experience, looking around the country or even their own communities, or hope that if a certain individual or group gets into power, that they will benefit materially by being given some type of favored attention by those in control of the state machinery.
Dr. Wolf, head-to-head with these two leading candidates, talking about former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and deputy or incumbent deputy president William Ruto, where is the state of the race at the moment?
Yes, well, coincidentally, we had two surveys that came out today. It was the one from TIFA, the company that I do consulting work for. And that gave the deputy president, I believe it was, an 11-point advantage, 38% to 27%, when we asked people not who they would vote for, but who would people like the next president to be. And another survey that was undertaken by Radio Africa, that, and their figure was, I think, 49% for the deputy president and 36 or 37% for the former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Both these surveys, as I said, show about a 10% advantage for the incumbent deputy president, even if both of them showed over the last couple of months, comparing with their previous polls, each company's previous poll, a gain of about 20 to 25% by the former Prime Minister. That is a reduction in the gap between him and the deputy president of 4 or 5%. At the same time, just to finish, the figure for the deputy president with the TIFA poll of, I think, 38%, over the last 18 months, the five surveys that we've done, his figure has always been between 35 and 40%. So really, and that's almost within the margin of error. So in this entire period, his popularity has not moved up at all, nor has it fallen, whereas the former prime minister has come up quite far from where he was a year ago.
Dr. Tom Wolf is a poll consultant with the market research company Trend and Insight for Africa. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Africa's biggest international contemporary art fair has opened its doors to the public for the first time since the coronavirus pandemic began. The Investec Cape Town Art Fair went online last year, but this year has nearly 100 artists exhibiting works in person from 20 countries. For VOA, Vicky Stark reports from the fair in Cape Town, South Africa.
The Cape Town International Convention Centre has come alive with this arts event. There were smiles behind masks Friday as people walked into the exhibition space. The director of the Investec Cape Town Art Fair is Laura Vincetti.
It's absolutely a joy to be back to almost real life. We have had 2 years that have been very tough, but the art community has been very supportive. And the city in South Africa needed an event to reconnect people. So we are very grateful to everyone.
She says this is the ninth year the fair is being held. It was hosted online last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
It's been a long journey since the beginning, but now the fair is on an international calendar. We got a lot of exhibitors from overseas, like many, more than 1,000 collectors coming just for this week to Cape Town.
Franco-Benin ceramicist King Hon Den Kinko, speaking from Benin, said he was extremely grateful to have his work shown at the fair.
Wow. Well, it's a blessing to be still here, first of all, and to still be having a career and still be showing. And to have people wanting to still show the work after this time that we had where everyone was in lockdown. And so, yeah, it's great. I'm happy.
Nigerian art lover Usen Obot flew in especially to see the show.
I would say it is like getting back to life, because for me as an artist and a gallery owner, see images is okay. Seeing the real thing is a real deal.
Fundraiser Tanya Townsend was there to make connections for a children's home that runs an art project.
It's absolutely amazing. You just realise how starved we've been over the last 2 years. And just to see the buzz here, I didn't know what to expect, and it's so vast. And, you know, we South Africans just love foreigners and coming to our beautiful city on this gorgeous sunny day. It's just so thrilling. It's fantastic.
Vincetti says they decided to host a hybrid event this year, so there is still an online component.
Of course, with the difficulties of traveling and also the fear for many people, especially from Europe and America, to travel to South Africa, they have the chance to go online and see the fair online. So what we are showing on our digital platform is exactly what you find at the fair. So the same galleries, the same works, and you can purchase or you just can browse and see what's going on.
The fair ends on Sunday. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with the second round playoffs, first legs of the Women's Africa Cup of Nations. Burundi and Burkina Faso both moved closer to a place at their first Women's Africa Cup of Nations. Burundi, who are unranked by FIFA, beat Djibouti 6-1. Burundi beat Ethiopia 6-0 over two legs in the first round. Burkina Faso, also hoping to reach their first major tournament, thrashed Guinea-Bissau 6-0 away from home. Elsewhere, Senegal beat Mali 1-0, while Zambia and Namibia played out a goalless draw. On Friday, Nigeria got close to a 12th consecutive participation in the Women's African Cup of Nations by beating Cote d'Ivoire 2-0 at the Abiola Stadium. Nigeria had beaten Ghana 2-1 on aggregate in October, while West African compatriots Cote d'Ivoire beat Niger 20-0 on aggregate. Also on Friday, Cameroon beat the Gambia 8-0 in Yaounde. Tunisia beat Equatorial Guinea 5-0. Botswana defeated Zimbabwe 3-1 in Harare, and South Africa beat Algeria 2-0 at Orlando Stadium in Johannesburg. 22 countries face two-legged playoffs to qualify for the tournament in Morocco. Uganda, who were given a bye after Kenya withdrew, and host Morocco are already assured of a place at the finals, which will be played from July 2nd to 23rd next year. Africa's representatives for the 2023 Women's World Cup will be decided at the Nations Cup, with the semi-finalists all qualifying for spots in Australia and New Zealand. In the CAF Champions League Group A match, Sudan's Said El Merrikh and South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns played to a goalless draw in Cairo on Saturday. With 4 points, Sundowns are top of the group. Algeria's CR Belouizdad drew 1-1 with Tunisia's Esperance in Algiers. Botswana debutants Galaxy also drew 1-1 with Tunisian giants Etoile du Sahel in Gaborone on Saturday, and Egypt's Zamalek and Angola's Sagrada played to an entertaining goalless draw in Luanda. Meanwhile, Nigerian sprinter Blessing Ogbare has been given a 10-year ban for multiple breaches of anti-doping rules. The Athletics Integrity Unit said the 33-year-old was banned for 5 years for the use of multiple prohibited substances and five more for not cooperating with the investigation. Ogbare was suspended during the Tokyo Olympics after failing a drug test. She won a silver medal in the long jump at the 2008 Olympics and has also won world championship medals in the 200 meters and long jump. She has 30 days to appeal against the Athletics Integrity Unit's disciplinary tribunal's decision at the Court of Arbitration for Sports. Elsewhere, Uganda's Jacob Kiplimo and Ethiopia's Gimawit Gebzhar ran course records to win the Dubai Marathon on Saturday, clocking 57.56 and 1 hour 4 minutes and 14 seconds respectively during another first edition of the World Athletics Elite Labor Road Race. Kiplimo is the holder of the world record of 57.31 he set in Lisbon in November. The 21-year-old world half-marathon champion, who finished third in the 10,000 meters and fifth in the 5,000 meters at the Tokyo Olympics last year, beat Kenyan's Rogers Kwemoi, who came second, and Kenneth Kiprop, who was third. Gebzhar made a successful start to her half-marathon career race, her course record of 1 hour 4 minutes and 14 seconds being the second fastest ever women's debut for the distance, behind Letesnebet Gidey's world record of 1 hour 2 minutes and 52 seconds run in Valencia in October. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last week was the 11th anniversary of the brutal killing of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, and with that, the end of the Gaddafi regime. Shortly thereafter, arms and men went from Libya down to the Sahara and then to northern Mali, and the instability started at that time. Soon after that, there was a coup in Mali and greater instability in that country. The ECOWAS tried to help, but this was not enough, and the spread of the jihadist movement in the Sahel continues. France, of course, tried to fill the gap. Also last week, President Macron decided that France would withdraw all its armed forces from Mali, owing to disagreement with the military government and the presence in Mali of Russian private military group, the Wagner Group. It was also hinted that the European groups that have been assembled by France to help in the war against the jihadists would also move out of Mali. The military government is asking now that France should move its troops out now and not wait until 6 months. The question then is, what will happen in the fight against the jihadists? President Macron said France will continue its combat of the jihadists, and it has hinted that it might move its headquarters to Niamey. But of the five African countries that we are working with France in this fight against jihadists, two, Burkina Faso and Mali, are no longer cooperating. This is why there is so much concern as to what will happen in the Sahel. Also last Friday, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Guterres, spoke about global challenges, and he was very frank. He noted that the Security Council in the maintenance of international peace and security is not doing so well. He also stated boldly that the instability in the international system today is worse than was true during the intense period of the Cold War. He also referred to the problem in the Sahel. And he suggested that what is required now is not the traditional United Nations peacekeeping mechanism, which depends on consent by host government. He said that what is required is peace enforcement force. And then he referred to what has happened in Mozambique. He noted that confronted with the problem of the jihadists, SADC and Rwanda have helped the government, and that today some stability have been restored in northern Mozambique. For many who have followed developments in Africa, particularly the constant demand of the African Union and sub-regional groups for the Security Council to strengthen its relations with regional groups in the maintenance of peace and security, the suggestion by the Secretary General is welcome. But the members of the Security Council, particularly those permanent members who have dug in their heels over the decades to prevent any coordination meaningfully between the Council and regional groups, it is time for them to change. This will happen if the Council, through the Secretary General, is able to develop mechanism to promote peace enforcement mechanism on the African continent. Of course, this would require that the Council also expand its permanent members' scope. Secretary General Guterres also noted in this conference in Munich that it is time for all the members of the world to do more to attend to strengthen the United Nations. He mentioned the African Union, the need for it to be strengthened by adequate financing. But we must not forget that Africans have tried before. Even before the debacle in Libya and the current impasse, the African Union presented a roadmap for reconciliation between Gaddafi and his opponents. They were pushed aside. Even when the problem began, as I said, in Mali, ECOWAS presented a plan, went to the Security Council and requested assistance. They were pushed aside. It is very baffling as to why many still refuse to accept the fact that ECOWAS through ECOMOG was able to maintain peace and security in Liberia and Sierra Leone. In the current discussion about Ukraine, Europeans have argued effectively that there should be no more spheres of influence on the European soil. And if this is true for Europe, then Africa should not be reserved for spheres of influence. Thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. What I know.
papa, if things don't begin, time soon, sooner or later, we go drop the
beat. Emma Sin! Me now one times ten. How you doing on the bed? Yeah, I'm protected just like Daniel in a lion's den.
Journalist demo. This country is a democratic country. Sylvia Blyden, keep the
fire burning. Let it burn.
You been say you dey give we transparency. Now you been say you dey give we accountability. For them sell but authority. Airport and the rest of them to foreign at the money. Now foreign land go they go. Under control between the dry, dry palm tree and the hot burning sun. Because anyone we want bring run, run. Now fire go burn. When the soldier, you gotta know I push, push. Dabe, Bawa, da Bibi. When the soldier, you gotta know I push, push. Dabe, Bawa, da Bibi.
Music Production.
That was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Mohamed El Shenawi, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, nobody gathers firewood to roast a thin goat. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.